UK Film Council and Capital Films present a Granada production. In association with Masterpiece Theatre. Timothy Spall. Juliet Stevenson. Pierpoint. Eddie Marsan. Christopher Fulford. A huge arched window illuminates a large atrium within a prison. A man walks down some stairs from a landing. A caption appears. Pentonville Prison, London, 1932. The shaven-headed, grim-faced man comes to a halt.
Now, for reasons that will soon become crystal clear, no detail of what you see and hear this week must ever become public knowledge. Gentlemen, this job has always been, and must always remain, the most closely guarded of secrets.
A heavy door is opened and three men in suits are ushered into a gloomy room by the man and a warder. One of the men, a fat, fair-haired individual in his early 40s, looks apprehensively around the room.
The prisoner is first brought into this lobby area.
Aye, aye. That's full four, isn't it? Booked to hang their coat on. Mind you, they won't be needing it afterwards, will they?
Settle down. So then, this is the lobby area. With coat hooks. Then, through this door, their cell.
The man ushers the three others into the cell and nods to the warder to wait outside.
The only one like it in the prison. Be their home for a minimum of 3 Sundays from the day of sentence. That's the law. This is where the prisoner eats, sleeps, and waits. Waits for one fine morning, 9 o'clock, when one of you comes through that door. Now, when you do, you'll be sitting here. As you enter, you'll stand up and instinctively turn and take a step towards you. He's thinking you're leading back out onto the landing. And that, gentleman, is where you've got him, because in those few seconds you take his left hand with your right, spin him, pinion him, and lead him back out that way. You'd be confused by this. Disorientated. But he'd not be scared. He knows what's out there. Just a door to a courtyard and a wall with Mr. Sykes' coat hooks on it. Mr. Cooper, would you push back that door, please?
Cooper opens the door, revealing a death cell beyond. A hangman's noose dangles from the ceiling. The three men all look shocked.
So what do? We exploit it. We get him in there and dropped before he's had time to recover from the shot. Before he can struggle or fight, or before he even knows what's happening. No sense in prolonging the agony for him. All for you.
A sandbag is dropped from the gallows.
The heavier the man, the shorter the drop you give him. The weaker the neck, the shorter the drop. Get it wrong, and you'll pull his head off. Pierpoint. Male, 24 years old, 5'6", 160 pound in his clothes.
Occupation?
Manual labourer.
A good strong neck. Table says 6'3". I give him 6'11".
So would I. Good. Very good.
Pierpoint, the fat man, makes some notes. Later, he pulls up outside a shop in a delivery truck. He wears an apron and brown warehouseman's coat. Pierpoint adjusts his flat cap in the truck's wing mirror. Inside the shop, the woman behind the counter, Annie, sees Pierpoint approaching and quickly pretends to be absorbed in some paperwork. As he comes in and takes his cap off, Annie feigns surprise at his arrival. They both smile.
Mr. Pierpoint. Well, this is a surprise. We weren't expecting you till next week.
No, no, I was just passing. Oh, I finished me round a little early and... here I am.
Well, that's nice.
I was,
He eyes a girl behind the counter.
Fetch some more paper bags out the back, Alice.
Alice hovers and Pierpoint waits awkwardly.
Now, please.
Reluctantly, Alice goes. Pierpoint adjusts his hair.
Actually, I didn't have a special reason for calling in today, Miss Fletcher. I was wondering, I think that's...
Pierpoint, we don't have a delivery today.
No, I just come in for some pipe tobacco. Can I have a fancy of ready rub, please? Their box is Swan's, thank you.
And don't keep my staff chatting. They're busy.
Right, just set the time.
Annie gets the order.
That'll be one and two, thank you. Mr. Sellers, I can't find any bags.
Mr. Sellers follows Alice into the stockroom. Once they've gone, Annie whispers to Pierpoint. Pierpoint smiles and tips his cap as he goes out. Annie smiles to herself as she watches him go. On his mantelpiece at home is a government letter in a manila envelope. His mother stands staring at it.
That last sends a regard. You know, Annie, Miss Fletcher.
He looks round from washing his hands for a reaction, but doesn't get one. His mother walks away from the mantelpiece, her expression grim. She blanks him completely.
I works in the sweet shop, she does.
She walks past without even looking at him. He dries his hands and goes into the living room. He spots the government letter on the mantelpiece. The envelope's headed, On His Majesty's Service. Later, Pierpoint and his mother sit down to supper. There's an atmosphere between them. The envelope remains unopened on the mantelpiece. Mrs. Pierpoint looks over at the letter.
Why now, Albert? Why start now?
He stares down thoughtfully.
It's just in me. I always knew it would come out someday.
You'll have no luck, Albert. Not as long as you live. And I'll say to you what I said to your father. You don't bring it over that threshold.
He nods. Later, she leaves Albert with his Uncle Tom on the letter.
I'll let you get on with it, then.
The men wait until she's gone. Then Albert opens the letter. He and Uncle Tom sit down on chairs either side of the fire. Albert reads the letter and looks up at his uncle.
I've been accepted, Uncle Tom.
Your dad would have been proud of you, Albert. No doubt about that. It's what he wanted. Another Pierpoint on the list.
They've offered me a job. Strangeways Prison, Anthony David Farrow. Tuesday the 26th.
What's the matter?
I want to be assistant.
A prison warder leads Albert and another man with a pencil moustache, Sykes, along a landing in Strangeways. They stop outside a door and Sykes looks in through the spy hole at the inmate. He turns back to Albert.
He don't know much, he don't.
He turns back for another look at the inmate, then closes the spy hole and points at his temple.
6 foot 6 in my mind. I'll have to look it up in my book.
Albert looks through the spy hole and sees a man in his 30s. Sykes checks a rope on the gallows.
We'll use this one. Less stretching it. Like old Andrew said. Right, if we want to stretch tomorrow, I'll be laying on his neck. Hey, Albert. Stay clear.
Albert frowns and steps back from the trap door. Sykes puffs on a fag and tugs at the release mechanism. A sandbag drops down on the end of the rope into the pit below.
Seems to be working. Come on, let's get some tea, Dennis.
Sykes walks off, leaving Albert to catch a swinging ball of rope. Sykes lies on a bunk, dragging on a fag.
8 hours, 20 minutes, Albert. That's all he's got left. Ticking away. Gets involved with some old tart. She pushes him over the edge. He winds up in here waiting for us to come knocking on his door. Don't bear thinking about, does it? Wonder if he's looking at his watch.
I don't think 6'6" is enough. He's a slight lad, but he's stronger than he looks. I think you should give him 6'8".
6'6", 6'8". Don't really matter, does it?
Sykes lights a fresh cigarette and takes a drag.
Either way, he's going down.
Sykes exhales a plume of smoke. Lying on the lower bunk, Albert shakes his head in silent disagreement. In the death cell, sandbags dangle from the end of the hangman's rope. A procession of prison officials, including Sykes and Albert, makes its way along a landing to the condemned cell. As they wait outside the door, a nervous-looking Sykes tugs surreptitiously at Albert's sleeve. Albert regards him with alarm. The prison governor nods to a warder who unlocks the cell. Inside, the condemned, Farrow, sits in his suit, praying frantically. As he hears the door open, he stands and faces Sykes, who just stares at him. Sykes looks down, unable to proceed. Albert pulls Farrow aside and takes a strap from Sykes to bind his hands. As he fastens them, Farrow looks round at Sykes.
Please. Help me.
Sykes glances at Albert, who hands him a strap for the prisoner's ankles. Sykes takes it and Albert clicks his fingers impatiently at him. Sykes hands over a hood and Albert pockets it, then turns Farrow to face him.
Follow me.
He leads Farrow into the death cell and stands him in front of the noose. Albert looks into Farrow's eyes and steadies him while Sykes fastens the strap around his ankles. With a last nod, Albert takes the hood from his pocket and puts it over Farrow's head. He then fastens the noose around his neck. Albert pulls the lever, releasing the trap doors, and Farrow falls down into the pit, the rope breaking his neck. An ashen-faced Sykes looks on and gags into his handkerchief, then falls to his knees. Albert straightens up and adjusts his waistcoat as Sykes gets to his feet. Albert looks past the creaking rope to a crucifix hanging on the far wall. Later, he and Sykes walk down a flight of metal stairs outside.
What have we just done, eh? We just killed a man, just like that.
Hey, lad, you don't want to think of it like that. Think of it as... I'm Albert again, you're Charlie. We finished the job, just the same as we were yesterday.
Yeah, but it won't ever be the same again, will it? Not after what we've just done. Hey? Here, you have this. You've done all the work, you have my money too.
No, no need.
Go on, you take it. I don't want it. All right? I don't want it!
Sykes forces his unwanted pay packet on Albert, then hurries off. Albert looks thoughtful for a moment, then pockets the money and walks calmly after Sykes. That night, Albert returns home. He hangs his hat and puts his bag down in the narrow hallway, then hangs his coat. Straightening his hair, Albert walks through to the kitchen where his mother is busy peeling vegetables in the sink.
I've done you a nice job. I'll warm it up for you.
Albert nods and puts his hand on his mother's shoulder. He sits at a table and opens a leather-bound book with his name, Albert Pierpoint, embossed on the cover. Inside the pages are blank and divided up into headed columns. He dips a nib pen in a pot of ink and carefully begins to enter the details of the day's execution. Albert and Annie from the sweet shop dance in a spotlight together, holding each other close. Albert wears his best suit and Annie is dressed in a beige cardigan and knee-length grey skirt. As Albert fills in the latest of many entries in his execution log, Annie comes through from the kitchen. He quickly closes the log.
Pork chop. Your favourite.
She puts the meal on the table in front of him.
Don't be too late, up.
She gives him a kiss on the forehead. Albert smiles up at her. She goes and Albert puts his cigar back in his mouth, then opens the execution log again and begins to write. Later, Annie lies awake in bed beside the slumbering Albert. In the morning, Annie sees Albert off to work and he gives her a peck on the cheek. He waves goodbye and wanders off with his gas mask in a box slung over his shoulder. Annie watches him walk off down the street, a troubled expression on her face. She shudders and goes back inside. Annie opens a cupboard and takes the execution log out. She stares down at it. She replaces the log without opening it. She shuts the cupboard and walks away into the kitchen looking fretful. Albert sits in a railway carriage, apparently absorbed in his own thoughts. In the sweet shop, Mr. Sellers comes blustering out of his office.
Mrs. Pierpoint, can you help me out with this stock take tonight? I know it's Alice's turn, but she's insisting on going out with the WVS collecting pots and pans.
Well, it's got war effort.
The shop turning a profit. That's for the war effort too, you know.
I don't mind, Mr. Sellers. Mr. Pierpoint's away tonight anyway, so...
What again? Where does he go on for these trips?
She looks awkward.
Oh. Private business, Mr. Sellers.
Oh, yes. Yes, of course. Thank you, Mrs. Pierpoint.
Mr. Sellers disappears back into his office. Annie moves a sheet of brown paper and uncovers a newspaper on the counter. An article reads, "Appeal fails. Clemency in the case of Dorothea Waddingham has failed, and sentence of death will be carried out at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning at Holloway Prison in London." She looks up from the paper with a bleak expression. Albert peers through the peephole of the condemned cell and sees Waddingham sitting calmly at the table within. He turns away.
8 foot 6.
He walks away. Later, he eats with his assistant, Kirky, a fat young man wearing a suit.
2 old ladies she killed. Got them to make out their wills to her and gave them morphine.
Did she?
The prison governor checks his watch. It's 9 o'clock. He nods to Albert, who nods back. A warden opens the condemned cell door and Albert and Kirky go in. Waddingham gets to her feet and Albert binds her hands behind her back, then turns her round to face him.
Follow me.
Albert leads the way into the death cell. At the sight of the noose, Waddingham, who's in her 30s, begins to crack. A female warder pushes her forward to the noose. Grim-faced, Albert puts a hand on her shoulder to steady her.
Oh, God, please help me.
Albert takes the hood from the breast pocket of his suit and puts it over Waddingham's head, then fastens the noose around her neck. He pulls the lever, and she's gone, through the trap door. At home, Annie is sweeping up ash from the hearth when the clock strikes 9. She gets up and looks at the clock, her pensive face reflected in the mirror above the mantelpiece. At the prison, Albert walks with Kirky and the governor, who lights a cigarette.
14.5 seconds, Pierpoint. Most satisfactory.
Thank you, sir. You try to take a pride in your work. I don't believe there's a quicker man on the list.
I'm sure there is not.
He offers a scotch.
Oh.
Now, am I mistaken? Did the prisoner speak on the scaffold?
Not that I was aware of, sir.
Funny. I thought I heard her say something.
No, sir.
Albert and Kirky exchange a look.
She did say something, didn't she?
Aye. She asked for a god. It's not to do with me or anybody else. Between her and her execution.
They undress her on the gallows.
When I walk into that cell, I leave Albert Pierpoint outside. I never mix the two. To be clear about these things. People are always wondering whether it's possible to take a life. They're not affect you. I've written bloody books on it.
What do they say?
I don't know. Not really taking the life, is it?
As the naked corpse dangles on the gibbet, Albert sponges it down.
The governor wants these people executed, not you or me. That's the way I see it. I never concern myself with what they've done. It doesn't matter to me. Right, bring it down.
Kirky lowers the body and Albert wraps a shroud round it.
Grand. Right.
Albert removes the noose from around the corpse's neck, then takes the bag off its head. He rolls the head gently in his hands to check the neck break.
Nice and clean. Second and third vertebrae. You see, we don't hurt him, Kirky. Instant. A professional job. Well done. She wouldn't have felt anything. All right, lower her down.
Kirky lowers the body on a block and tackle.
That's it. All right, take her away.
Albert unhooks the corpse from the rope supporting it and gently lays it on its back on a table. Kirky comes down some stairs into the pit. Hands in pockets, he wanders over to the table and looks down at Waddingham's face.
It's not so much the execution. It's this bit I hate, Albert. Why can't they get someone from the mortuary to do this?
Because they wouldn't take care of her, would they? She paid the price. She's innocent now.
He looks at Kirky with an intense expression. Albert pushes a blackout curtain aside and walks into a busy pub. Its patrons are of both sexes, many of them in uniform.
Evening, Albert.
Hi, hi. Good, Miller. Hello.
Hello, are you going to sing for us then, Albert?
Give us a chance, I'm fine.
Over here.
Hello, Tom.
Hello, Tish.
Hello, Wack.
Didn't think we were going to see you tonight.
No, I didn't make it. I've had a really busy day.
Come find us a couple of tins of Spam off the back of your lorry, could you, Albert?
Of course, yeah, it's just a matter of time and temperature, Percy. When Albert freezes over.
Cheers. Get that down, you. Get the old vocal cords loosened up.
Right.
They drink.
Right then, Tish, lad, let me have a little think here now.
I like to think about things, Tosh. Do you know what I thought about the other day? What if a person's brains was made of gunpowder?
You thought about that, did you, Tish?
Yes, I did. And then I stopped thinking about it in case it were true.
Well, I wouldn't worry, Tish, lad. There's not enough in there to blow your hat off. Right, and how about this one, then? There was a man. His name was Rouse. He had the key to every house.
He was suspected and then arrested for making whoopee.
Another bride, another groom, another sunny honeymoon, another season, another reason for making whoopee.
Albert comically thrusts his groin at Tish. As the drinkers applaud, Albert wags his finger at them in mock admonishment. A glamorous-looking young woman calls over to Tish.
You didn't tell me you could sing.
Jessie, you came.
Said I would, didn't I?
Yeah, I'm so glad you came. Isn't she lovely, Tosh? This is Jessie Kelly, she's my...
An acquaintance.
Yes. And this is Tosh, my partner in crime.
Pleased to meet you.
And you? What can I get you, Jessie?
No, you're all right. Get me on drinks. You steal your pals.
She gives Tish a kiss on the cheek and goes. Albert watches her leave through narrowed eyes. Later, Albert walks alone down a darkened street, puffing on a cigar. He rounds the corner and, hearing a noise, goes over to a garage door to investigate. Finding a crack in the door, he peeps inside and sees Tish and Jesse engaged in a vigorous bunk-up. Albert checks no one's coming, then pushes his hat back for a better look. Albert looks through the spy hole of a death cell at a prisoner with bandaged wrists. He turns to a new assistant, Georgie.
What's up with the bandages?
Suicide bid. Smashed his arm for a window, slashed his wrist. He's in it for killing his girlfriend. Says he just wants to get it over and done with.
Albert takes another look at the man.
Well, we'll do our best, Georgie. 5 foot 6.
I was assistant to Dougie Ford on my last job.
All right, that's it.
Yeah. Geezer in strange ways. Gangland murder.
How'd it go?
Not too bad. Bit jittery was Ford, but done all right. Fast with it. They said 16 seconds after.
Right. There's your son back. Stretch for a night.
Reckons he's in with a shout at being number one, does old Fordy.
Does he now? Now, pay attention, Georgie. Tomorrow morning, I'm going to pull this pin half out. But just enough to make it catch. It'll make it easy to whip it out quickly. So I want you off them traps like lightning.
I'll be quick for you, Albert, I promise. We're a good partnership, we aren't we?
Albert nods.
I want to bust 13 seconds tomorrow, Georgie.
He opens the trapdoor, dropping the sandbag on the end of the rope.
That was my father's average.
At home, Annie, overcome by her curiosity, sits looking through Albert's execution logbook. She looks a little bewildered by the meticulous recording of the details of each hanging. Albert and Georgie sit at the table in their room at the prison, and Albert stuffs the hood into the breast pocket of his suit jacket. Georgie watches a little nervously as Albert puffs on a cigar, an intense expression on his face. As a warder comes into the room, Albert carefully sets his cigar down on an ashtray. Albert nods to Georgie, then gets up and they head out. The execution party waits outside the condemned cell. The governor gives the nod to a warder who unlocks the cell door. Inside, the condemned gets to his feet and Albert binds his wrists behind his back. As soon as it's done, the prisoner runs into the death cell, and Albert has to jog after him. Albert puts the hood over his head, followed by the noose, while Georgie binds his ankles. Then Albert pulls the lever and drops him into the pit. An official checks his watch.
7.5 seconds. That's a record.
The governor steps forward to Albert.
I don't mind telling you, Pierpoint. I don't think there's a better man in the country.
Thank you, sir.
The governor heads off and Albert straightens his hair, which is slicked back with brilliantine. Albert and Georgie return to their room and resume their seats at the table. Georgie picks up a packet of cigarettes and Albert picks his cigar up from the ashtray. It's still alight. He takes a drag and chuckles to himself.
7.5 seconds, Georgie. Never seen anything like it. In the history of capital punishment.
I don't think Ford or any of the other buggers will be getting a look in now, eh? All I can say is, Georgie, in front of Maximovsky, got his wish.
Albert takes a drag on his cigar and stares pensively into the distance. Dreaming, a film featuring Bud Flanagan. As a jockey, Flanagan answers the phone on his horse.
I don't know, sir. He won't go.
Sir Charles was right. You couldn't ride a ruggy horse.
I make you apologise for that, you cad.
Albert and Annie are in the audience.
I'll tell you how to go after Bruce Canteen wins. Well, what did I tell you?
Magnificent, Paddy. I apologise.
The end credits roll over Flanagan asleep in bed. Albert and Annie applaud along with the rest of the audience. Annie munches some sweets while Albert puffs on his cigar. A newsreel comes on. The first item on the reel is entitled Belson Trial.
The Belson War criminals arrive at Lüneburg for trial. Their faces give little clue to what they're thinking. Last out of the lorry is Josef Kramer, the beast of Belson. The calm orderliness of the scene contrasts violently with the ghastly pictures which shocked the country when they were shown in British newsreels.
Albert glances anxiously at Annie.
More than 4 million men, women and children were scientifically murdered by gassing. In this camp, the SS women, led by Irma Greiser, had their victims torn to pieces by savage dogs. Pregnant women went straight to the gas chamber. Everything done with hideous precision.
Prisoners have been provided with Allied officers as defense counsel. Next to Kramer sits Dr. Fritz Klein, German medical officer at Belsen, a man with a loaded conscience. After 12 years of Nazi fuckery, one wonders what the Germans think of British justice. They may well mistake fairness for weakness.
Albert and Annie come out of the auditorium into the cinema foyer where they bump into Tish and Jesse. Albert and Tish shake hands.
Hello, Tosh.
Hello, Tish. Hello. Annie, this is Tish, you know, that young songbird I were telling you about.
Oh, yes.
Very pleased to meet you.
Albert tips his hat to Jesse.
So did you enjoy the flick, then?
Ah, well, it was very comical, wasn't it?
You've got to laugh, haven't you? They're my favourite, the crazy gang.
I don't know why. A lot of grown men playing silly buggers, if you ask me.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Pierpoint, this is Jessie, my lady friend.
Yes, yes, we've met before. Oh, perhaps you'd like to join us. We're going for a drink.
Oh, well,
oh, thank you. I think we've to be getting back, haven't we?
Well, maybe another time, then, eh?
Annie looks down awkwardly.
Or maybe not.
Don't be like that, Jessie.
I don't know why you're creeping around them. No time for you. Well, I've no time for them.
She marches off.
Jesse!
With a look at the pier points, Tish goes after her.
Jesse! Talk about brazen. Just walking out with them bold as brass.
Nothing to do with us, is it?
Oh, it's not right, Albert. I mean, she's got a husband and two children. It's not right.
That night, Annie and Albert lie in bed together. Annie is asleep while Albert lies awake, staring into the darkness. He turns to look at Annie.
Annie, are you awake?
What is it, love?
It's just, there's something I want to tell you.
Can it not wait till morning?
No, it's important.
Annie still doesn't open her eyes.
It's about what I do. When I go away. You know, the letters.
Annie opens her eyes but doesn't turn to face him.
I know what you do, Albert.
You know that.
I've worked it out.
Why didn't you say?
Well, I wanted to hear it from you.
Albert sits looking rather nervous in the hallway of a large, well-appointed government building. He looks to his left as a uniformed army officer approaches him. The officer speaks to him, and Albert gets up and follows him. They walk up a large carpeted staircase, passing two men deep in conversation on the way up. The officer shows Albert into a huge colonnaded drawing room, a bit like a gentleman's club. A government minister gets to his feet as he comes in and addresses him.
Ah, Pierpoint.
I suppose you're wondering why you've been dragged all the way down to London today.
I cross my mind, sir, yes.
Well, I'm afraid you have to blame the Field Marshal here. Pierpoint, this is Field Marshal Montgomery.
No! Monty!
Why?
What did he say?
Well, he said... he looked me in the eye and he said, the eyes of the world are on us, Mr. Pierpoint. After what the Nazis did in Belsen...
After what the Nazis did at Belsen, I think it's important to show that British justice is firm but fair. Now, I'm reliably informed that you're the very best we have in your particular field.
Did he say that? Did he really? Did he actually say you are the best man?
Aye. The Washians will pull them up against a wall, of that I've no doubt. The Americans apparently strangle the buggers, leave them dangling on the end of a rope for half an hour. But I understand that you adopt a more sophisticated method, Mr. Pierpoint.
Well, I must get some starch for your collars. And I think I might have saved up enough coupons for a new pair of shoes.
I have a system of variable drops, sir. Separation of the second and third vertebrae results in instant death.
And you can guarantee that in every instance?
Yes, sir. I believe I can.
Well, you're the man for me, Mr. Pierpoint. I want the world to know that our executions are the most efficient and the most humane. And you're a very important part of that plan.
And what did you say?
Well, I told him I was a little busy with me grocery deliveries, but if I could find the...
Albert!
What do you think? I told him I fly to Germany on Wednesday. I might be gone from Israel a week to 10 days. It's yours to be special. This is it, Annie. I'm number one.
Albert sits beside a rack who drives him along an airfield in a jeep. It's a grey morning and the airstrip is surrounded by farmland. The jeep pulls up by a building where an officer is waiting to meet it. The officer stubs out his cigarette and goes over to Albert.
Mr. Pierpoint.
Aye.
You'd like to follow me, sir?
Albert follows the officer into a large hall where various army personnel are busy working at their desks.
Here's the list for Thursday. Yep.
Albert removes his hat as they approach a senior officer.
Ah! Pierpoint, good to see you again.
Governor Patton Walsh. I'm sorry, sir, I should say Brigadier Patton Walsh. I didn't wonder when they said the name.
I understand Monty asked for you personally.
Well, I'm sure I was just the first one available on this, sir.
Yes, well, look, we've had the gallows constructed to Home Office specifications, as you've requested. And here's the list of tomorrow's condemned prisoners.
Albert takes the list and regards it gravely.
Don't know what we'd have made of this back in Civvy Street. Eh, Pierpoint? 13 in one day.
I'm sorry, I'm not with you, sir. I thought we had a week to do this job.
Well, yes. But there are different batches each day.
Well, how many others are there, sir?
47 in total.
47?
And that's just this week. I'm afraid you'll find them coming thick and fast now that the courts have delivered their verdicts. Jolly good. Lieutenant Llewellyn here has been assigned to act as your assistant, and he'll show you to your quarters.
Yes, sir.
Shall I take these for you, sir?
No, I'll hold them that one. Thank you, sir.
Looking a little shaken, Albert follows Llewellyn out of the room. They walk along a corridor and Llewellyn opens a series of glass doors for Albert.
It's rather rot, isn't it, sir? 13 in one day.
What Monty has asked for, Monty will get.
In his room, Albert lays out all his execution paraphernalia. The straps, rope, and hood. The next day, he and Llewellyn scrutinise the condemned men through binoculars.
A big fellow to the right. That's Kramer, coming down to Belson. He's to stand on his balcony and take pot shots at the poor buggers for the fun of it. A little behind him, older fellow, that's Fritz Klein, Dr. Death we call him, did all the experiments. The young woman, to the right, that's Irma Grease, used to walk around the camp with a bullwhip. They have witnesses who saw her...
Now, listen to me, Lieutenant. We're not interested, you understand? We don't care what they've done. They're human beings and they've got to die. That's all we need to know. When you're working with me, you concentrate on height, weight and physical condition. That way we get the job done quickly and efficiently.
Yes, sir.
Albert resumes his inspection of the condemned. Later, he and Llewellyn weigh them in. Albert makes a note of each person's weight and height.
196 pounds. Irma Grease.
Keine Unterhaltung!
As Grease steps up to be measured, she looks contemptuously at Albert.
5'3".
She turns to Albert.
You do the Jews work for them.
Llewellyn puts her on the scale and Albert gazes dispassionately at her.
113 pounds.
She's led away. Llewellyn turns to Albert, who's making some notes.
That's the last of them.
Albert glances up from his paperwork.
I suppose we let them hang for an hour before we take them down. I have to cut that back to 20 minutes. We'll never get it done. We'll double up the men, but we'll do the women first, one at a time. Start with her.
Yes. Arrogant bitch.
She's the youngest. She'll be the most frightened.
He turns back to his paperwork, leaving Llewellyn a little taken aback. In grey morning light, two British soldiers patrol the base carrying Lee Enfield 303 rifles. An aircraft hangar has been converted to act as the death cell for the executions.
Irma Grease.
A line of senior officers are on hand to witness the executions. Irma Grease stands in front of Albert.
Follow me.
Geh mit ihm.
Albert walks up onto the scaffold and Grease, her hands bound behind her back, follows him. As Llewellyn binds her ankles, Albert stares grimly into her eyes, then takes the hood from his jacket pocket and pulls it over her head. He slips the noose into place around her neck, walks over to the lever, releases the safety pin and pulls the lever. As Grease drops to her death, a watching general flinches.
Right, gentlemen, we'll reassemble in 20 minutes.
Albert nods to Brigadier Patton Walsh as he steps down off the gallows. 20 minutes later, another woman is standing on the gallows in front of Albert. He positions her in front of the noose and slips the hood over her head. The observing officers watch impassively until the lever is pulled, when they all jump. More women are dropped to their deaths in quick succession. As the day progresses, Albert gets to the men. Flanked by two military policemen, Joseph Kramer is hooded and the noose placed around his neck. Then he's dropped to his death. Albert looks down at Kramer, then up at Llewellyn. Later, Llewellyn and Albert sit at a table near the gallows, smoking.
Strange, I thought this would be a piece of cake. After what these people have done. Lining someone up in your sights, pulling the trigger. Well, that's one thing. But standing with them on the gallows, both knowing what's going to happen.
He takes a thoughtful drag on his cigarette and stares into the distance.
It's the knowing that's the worst part of it.
absolute certainty that they're going to die. Seeing it in their eyes.
He absently scratches at his face and stares into the distance, sucking on his cigarette again.
Still, it's like you said. It's not really us in here, is it?
Well, that's right, lad.
Albert flicks some ash from his cigar into an ashtray and takes another drag. Llewellyn stubs his cigarette out.
Time for a brew.
Albert shakes his head.
No. We don't want to fall behind.
Albert gets up and walks briskly over to the gallows. Somewhat reluctantly, Llewellyn gets up and follows him. Standing on the gallows, Albert lights a fresh cigar and looks up at a newly installed second rope, which will enable him to hang two people at the same time. Brigadier Patton Walsh looks up from writing at his desk. Albert finishes placing the hood and noose over one man's head, then steps to his right and prepares a second man to be hanged. The lever is pulled and both men drop together. Shots around the base. Empty corridors and offices, a speaker on a wall, a dead bird by a window. Two more men are dropped from the gallows. Some anti-climb spikes around some guttering. Another two men are readied, then dropped from the gallows. Brigadier Patton Walsh steps down from the gallows, followed by Albert. At the end of a busy day, the twin nooses on the gibbet are coiled up. A tired-looking Albert and Llewellyn lift a corpse into a coffin.
Right. Fetch the last coffin in. That's what's done.
There's no more left, sir. Bit of a breakdown in communication.
How do you mean?
There's no more coffins. They said just to stretch him out, tip him into the ground as he is.
No, that's not right. The 13 prisoners should be 13 coffins. No, I'm not having it. 13th day of the month, 13 prisoners, 13 witnesses. I'm not having it at all. This man has paid the price, do you understand? He's atoned for his sins. And now what's left of him should be treated with gentle dignity, do you see?
Llewellyn nods.
Yes, sir. I'll go and sort another coffin.
Ah, you do that, lad.
As Llewellyn goes, Albert stares around the room in wide-eyed outrage. He walks over to a table and chair nearby and sits down heavily. Looking drained, he leans forwards and rests his head on his hand. Sometime later, back in England, a cab drives up a rain-washed street. It comes to a halt and Albert gets out of the back. The cab drives off and Albert crosses the street. As he makes for his front door, a reporter and photographer emerge from the shadows and follow him.
Mr. Pierpoint! Mr. Pierpoint! Jack Ellis, Daily Sketch. Can you tell us about your time over in Germany? How many did you drop?
You what?
The Belsen mob. Did they have any last words on the gallows? Have you got a message for our readers?
No, I bloody haven't. Now up it!
He shuts the door on them as the photographer takes another picture.
Hey, love.
Hey, Harry, love, there's a reporter out there and a fella taking photographs.
Yes, I know. They've been there a couple of days, asking when you'd be back and you've been on the wireless.
What do you mean, on the wireless?
They mentioned you by name. Albert Pierpoint, they said.
What did it say?
Oh, you know, where you've been and what you've been doing. And you've been in the papers too, loads of times. I've kept them for you.
Albert looks troubled.
Well, that isn't right. No. Hmm? That isn't right at all, no.
Good luck to you, Mr. Pierpoint!
Keep up the good work, Albert. String them all up, I say. That's a sway.
In the pub, he's treated as a conquering hero. Albert and Tish.
So, how's it going then? You know, with your lady friend.
Oh, but, well, I finished it with her.
Oh.
Yeah, she was messing me about. Devastated she was when I told her. Said I was everything to her. I bought her a diamond ring and everything. Cost me a month's wages, but I broke it off, because she was messing me about. Well, there's only so much that you can put up with, isn't there?
Albert smiles and nods. Later, he arrives home with a newspaper and shows it to Annie.
Look at that. It's not right, Annie.
Hmm?
What I'll do is private. Everybody knows about it. I'm not comfortable with it. It's not how it's done.
The headline says Avenging Angel.
Now, I've been thinking, love. I've done my duty. Maybe it's time to give it up.
She throws the paper down on the table.
I think you're right. I think you should give it up. You've always said you don't get enough respect delivering groceries.
No, but I meant, you know...
I know what you meant, love. But just listen to me for a minute, will you?
She pours a cup of tea, then fetches a cake tin from the sideboard and brings it to the table.
This money that you brought back from Germany. Well, with what we've got already, there's nearly £300 here.
You have to touch that. That's nothing to do with you.
Listen, you've always said you wanted to be your own boss, haven't you? Well, now is your chance. The lease on the Struggler's coming up in about 2 months' time. I telephoned the brewery. We could set ourselves up nicely there with this.
But no experience of running a pub.
Well, we could make a go of it. I know we could.
Well, we might fall flat on our faces. I mean, we've no idea how to drum up custom or anything. I mean...
Oh, well. And I think there's a few people out there who'd like to buy a pint off the man who hanged the beast of Elson. Don't you?
She hands a rather surprised-looking Albert a cup of tea. Later, the Pierpoints are in the Struggler pub together. Albert stands behind the counter and looks around as he lights a cigar. Annie looks around the establishment with a smile on her face, then looks across the counter at Albert. He nods thoughtfully. A prison warder leads Albert up some stairs inside a prison. In the hangman's quarters, Albert's assistant Georgie shaves and chats to him.
Hasn't stopped rabbiting, old Evans. Night and day. On and on. Better have some other fella done it.
Albert drinks a mug of tea.
He can't face it. Strangled his own daughter. Yeah. And buried her in a washhouse. And now he can't face it.
Albert stares pensively into the distance. The condemned cell door opens and Albert marches up to Evans and begins to bind his hands behind his back.
Mr. Pierpoint, really and truly, I'm in here for something I never done.
Right. Follow me.
Albert marches into the death cell. Evans follows, accompanied by two warders, and stops in front of the noose.
I think it was probably Christy what done it.
Albert slips the hood and noose over Evans's head, then pulls the lever and drops Evans to his death. Albert is in the back of a car driving past the protest meeting. The speaker sees Albert.
Is Pierpoint the murderer?
There! There!
Thank God
for you. Her words seem to have an effect on Albert as he settles back in his seat. Later, he arrives at the pub and comes in through the back door looking weary. He removes his hat and coat. He puts his bag down and looks through a glass partition into the front of the pub where Annie is busy serving the customers. Albert unbuttons his jacket and takes it off. He picks a fur coat up off the back of a chair and examines it briefly, then puts it back down. He turns back to the glass partition and hangs his head. Taking several deep breaths, he composes himself. He steps through a frosted glass door into the bar.
Here he is, Mr. Vodka!
He acknowledges the applause and gives Annie a kiss. He looks across the bar and notices Tish sitting at the back, looking sorry for himself.
What's up with old Tish?
Oh, I don't know. He's been like that all evening.
2 pints and a whiskey and ginger.
Right.
Albert notices some shorts lined up.
What are all those?
They're for you. They'll be buying them for you all night.
I couldn't possibly drink all of those. What are we going to do with them?
Sell them. Whiskey and ginger, was it, love?
That's it, thanks.
Hey, Tosh, come on, Tosh, give us a song, man.
Come on, Tish,
Tish looks up miserably, then gets to his feet a little unsteadily.
I'll give you a song.
Everyone turns to look at him.
Jealous heart, oh, jealous heart, stop beating. Can't you see the damage you have done? You have driven her away forever. Oh, jealous heart, now I'm the lonely one.
Albert stares at Tish, who sadly hangs his head. Albert nods. Later, they sit with a few friends at a table.
Come on, lad, let's do a memorial. Look at McGiggle. What do you fancy doing, eh? Come on.
Jessie comes into the pub with another man on her arm. Tish sees her.
Steady, lad.
She laughs and jokes with the man on her arm. Despite Albert's warning, Tish gets to his feet and marches over to her.
Oh, God, here he is.
This is him, yes. You're to keep away from her. She doesn't want you hanging around, following her, staring at a window. OK, you keep away from her. That's what we mean now.
I'm going away with him. Me and kids. Somewhere you will be able to follow us.
Keep your hands off.
I love you, Jess.
All right, come on now. Anyone have to call the police?
OK. He's got the message.
Right. I'd like the two of you out now, please.
I'm not going anywhere. It's him that's been bothering me. He had it coming.
Right. Come on now, love, please.
Get your hands off me. I'm not having them on me after what they've done.
Right. That's it. Out.
Get out. Stand it. Him touching you. They're covered in blood, his hands. That's what they are. Filthy with it, both of you.
Jessie picks up her handbag and goes with her partner, who punched Tish, to the floor. Later, when the pub's empty, Albert and a tearful Tish sit at a table together.
I even pray to God you're the man. Just to give me some peace. To stop me thinking about it.
Best thing all round is to try and forget it.
Yeah. Do you know what I admire about you? It's your strength of character. Yeah. The way you keep things under your hat. I mean, doing the things you do, bearing that load, and nobody would have guessed a thing.
Albert puffs on a cigar.
It's not been easy. I've got things in here too that I'd rather they weren't there. All right. I'm
and keep them at bay. Yeah. But they're waiting for me. Waiting for me to let me guard down, waiting all the bloody time they are.
He stares pensively into the distance. A thought flickers across his face.
I did a lot of jobs in Germany. More than were really good for me. Too many, really. I'm so bloody tired now.
Albert?
Hmm?
Annie stares at him. He smiles weakly back at her.
I don't let things bother me. Oh, no, no. No, I sleep like a baby, don't I, Annie?
She gives him a hug and a kiss. He smiles over at Tish.
Well, I best be going.
They get up from the table.
Good night.
Tish pulls his jacket on and Albert walks over to the door with him.
Nah, Tish, lad.
Spontaneously, Tish leans over and gives Albert a big hug. They separate.
Tosh, I am so sorry.
Albert nods and Tish heads out. Albert looks into the back room of the pub and sees his bag on a chair. He stares at it for a moment before switching the light off. He goes up into the bedroom and shuts the door behind him, then stretches wearily.
I've packed your bag for the morning.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. Thanks.
So what did Tish have to say?
Why were they? Very apologetic.
Yeah, so we should be. Bringing all that trouble into the pub.
Annie sits in bed reading. Albert sits down.
He loves her. I told her so.
He gets up and sits on the bed beside her. He touches her face and she turns away.
There's a record here of a job at Strangeways, but there's no corresponding payment.
What? Oh, yeah, it was probably a reprieve. You know, it happens all the time.
Well, is there no cancellation fee?
Well, it depends on the prison, you know. Some prisons pay and some don't.
Well, that's not fair. It's not your fault they're reprieved, is it? What about the inconvenience going all that way down there? For nothing?
It's only the pub, isn't it? You cover for me.
Yeah, but they don't know that, do they?
She gives him a pointed look.
You do a grand job running this place, you know. No. I'm really proud of you, Annie.
A woman approaches Albert.
Albert Pierpoint. It is you, isn't it? I know you from your photographs.
I'm sorry, madam. Can I help you?
Oh, dear God. Please save him. Please save my boy. This hits you going to hang him.
I'm sorry, madam. I can't help you.
Oh, please, Mr. Pierpoint. Please. He was a good boy, my Jimmy. Please. Tell him. You're not going to go through with it, Mr.
I'm sorry, madam.
Please.
I won't be there. You've got the wrong...
Please! Time. I can't think how else to save him! Please, Mr. Pierpoint!
I'm sorry.
Please!
He retreats into the pub cellar. Shaken, he lights a cigar. His hands shake, then he gets a grip on himself and the shaking subsides. In the pub, Albert reads a letter. Read James Henry Corbett, the above-named convict now lying under sentence of death, etc., etc. Please confirm that you're willing to be executioner.
I should be away on the 27th and the 28th.
Right over.
Albert sighs wearily and rests his head on his hand. He drives down a road in his Humber saloon, flanked by fields and hedges filled with cow parsley. Standing watch over one of the fields is a scarecrow. A warder opens a door and Albert follows him down a corridor within a prison. The warder leads him into the executioner's room where Georgie is already chatting with another warder. Albert pats him on the back.
I bet you that went the other side, you know. Albert?
Georgie?
Think you handy my bare side?
Alright.
They keep coming back for more, don't they? And they'll be out there tomorrow morning. Don't matter how cold it gets tonight. Well, what they want, Albert? This fella called it. He's took a young woman's life. He took her to an hotel room and strangled her. She's never coming back, is she, Albert? And why would they put up such a fuss on his behalf?
Albert opens his suitcase.
Let them cry and holler as much as they like, Georgie. You do your job, and I do mine. And I shall sleep soundly tomorrow. It's like I always do.
On the stairs.
Ah, there you are, Pierpoint.
Governor.
This fellow Corbett tomorrow.
Sir?
One thing rather queer to relate. The fact is, he says he knows you.
Does he?
Yes. Says he's a friend of yours.
I don't know any James Corbett, so I've never heard the name before. Well, since my picture's been in the newspaper, lots of people think they know me.
Only he's getting into rather a state over whether or not you'll acknowledge him tomorrow.
In what way?
Well, on a personal level, I suppose, when he went to the cell. He says it would mean a great deal to him if you did.
Well, that's not really the way, sir.
Help smooth things over, no doubt. We don't want any fuss. Do be Pierpoint.
No, sir.
Very good.
The governor wanders off, leaving Albert and Georgie somewhere between perplexed and troubled.
Can't you see the damage you... I don't get many feel like singing, do we, Albert? You had still, he's not got a bad voice, is he, guys? Is he?
Albert is troubled by the singing. Albert approaches the condemned cell with some trepidation and looks through the spy hole. Sitting at the table in the cell is Tish. He looks over at the spy hole. Albert turns away from the spy hole, looking shaken. Behind him, Georgie senses something is wrong.
Albert, what's that?
6 foot in. Oh, sir. 6 foot 6 or something.
Albert pushes past Georgie and a warder and hurries away. Later in the hangman's room, a warder has brought Albert and Georgie two plated salads. Albert uncovers his.
Hey. What's this? We're to be brought an hot meal. That's our entitlement, a hot meal. We're not bloody rabbits.
Oh, it's what's been there for us. Cook's gone home.
We'll get them to fetch the booger back! I'll take you up with them bloody job tomorrow!
Quivering with rage, Albert gets to his feet and looks out of the window.
And see what you can do.
Georgie looks apologetically at the warder who clears the table. Albert lights a cigar and scratches his forehead with his thumb. Later in the evening, Albert and Georgie are in their bunks. This particular night, however, Albert is having trouble sleeping. A sandbag hangs from the end of the rope in the death cell. The next morning, the execution party are waiting outside the condemned cell. Albert fiddles agitatedly with the buckled strap in his hands. He glances anxiously over at the governor and steps towards him, then, thinking better of it, goes back to fumbling with the strap. Georgie watches alarmed. Albert takes a deep breath as he tries to compose himself. A warder unlocks the door and Albert marches into the condemned cell. He stops behind Tish, who gets up and faces him. Albert doesn't look at him and continues fumbling with the strap.
Hello, Tosh.
Albert does his best to ignore him and carry on, but finds on this occasion he can't fight against his emotions. He looks up.
Hello, Tish, old pal.
Tish smiles at him and Albert looks softly back at him.
I'm sorry, lad. You're going to have to turn around.
Albert gives him a smile and Tish does as requested. Tish smiles to himself as Albert applies the strap to his wrists. Albert rests a fatherly hand on Tish's shoulder and turns to face him.
You'll be all right, Tish. Come on now. I'll look after you. Come on.
Albert leads him into the death cell and stops in front of the noose. Tish bows his head, and as Albert rests his hands on his shoulders, Tish makes to put his head in the noose. Albert smiles and straightens him up. He pulls the noose to one side and takes the hood from his pocket.
Thank you, Albert.
Albert nods and manages a very difficult smile. Tish smiles back and Albert puts the hood over his head, then slips the noose around his neck. He tightens the noose, then steps back and takes a last look at his friend. With some reluctance, he steps over to the lever and pulls it. The trap door opens and Tish drops into the pit, the rope breaking his neck. Albert looks down into the pit at the body dangling on the end of the rope for a moment, then straightens up, his face etched with sadness. He straightens his waistcoat and walks slowly out of the death cell. Later in the pit, Albert tosses a length of rope aside. Tish's body lies on a table nearby. Looking troubled, Albert slowly turns and looks down at his dead friend. With some difficulty, Albert pulls a sheet to cover Tish's face. Albert stares into the distance, looking shaken to the core. Annie jumps as Albert arrives home late. He staggers through the front door, looking rather the worse for wear.
Where have you been?
You know where I've been.
I was getting worried. You're so much later than you.
Nah, one for a drink.
Right. Did you meet up with some pals?
Never got any pals. I just wanted to spend that.
He throws a handful of cash down on the bar top.
Right, well, your dinner will be a bit dried up now, but I'll put some gravy on it. Would you like a potato with a...
No, I don't want anything, thank you.
He opens a bottle of spirits.
Why don't you ask me why I went drinking? Like my father used to, huh?
Annie stands staring at him.
Well, maybe you'll have a sandwich later.
He walks around the bar with his drink.
Not a bad night tonight. Most of the regulars in. I put some boxes of chocolates behind the bar. Sold 11 of them. Think come closing time, you know, they feel a bit guilty. They think maybe better take home a peace offering.
Albert gets his execution log.
Thought maybe we should start...
You want to know what I did today, Annie? Eh?
She looks at him a little fearfully, not knowing what to say.
I am Tish.
She looks taken aback.
Ah. James Henry Corbett, that was his name. You know, we never knew all that. He murdered Jessie, you know.
Dish?
One night, followed her to Liverpool, cheap hotel, his hands around her throat. He can't have her. Nobody can. Another sad, sort of little story, just like the rest of them. And I just put a rope round his neck and hanged him for it.
Annie stares wide-eyed.
Was there something? Don't you want to know about it? Yeah. Don't you want to know what he looked like? What he said? Yeah. Don't you want to know what it felt like to take a friend and do that to him?
She shakes her head and swallows hard.
No, what I was going to say was I thought we could start doing flowers, you know, keep a few bunches of flowers behind the bar, and what do you think?
I've done for him, Annie. Don't you understand? I've killed him. For what? For money. I looked into his eyes, Annie.
No, stop it, please.
He saw
stop
me,
it.
He thanked me.
Stop it! That's what we said. That's what we've always agreed.
But I want to talk about it now!
He opens his log.
Stop here. Of course it was me. It's been me all along. I've done for me. At least they killed in jealousy, haste or passion. What can I say? I've murdered the bloody lot of them. Hundreds of them.
Get off me, get off me.
I can't bear it anymore. It's not me on
well,
anymore.
You don't have to, because I don't want to know about it, Albert. I don't.
Oh, me, honey, please. Like you always do. Tell me I'm not a bad man.
He clings desperately to her.
Come on, Albert, come on. Can't.
She turns to face the wall as Albert collapses into a snivelling heap on the floor. Annie clings to the wall, shaking her head.
No. Do you think it's been like for me all these years? Ever think about that? Staring. Whispers. Do you think you're the only one who's suffered? We don't talk about what you do, Albert. No. We don't. Never have. Never will. No.
She pulls herself up and, unable to bring herself to comfort Albert, gives him a perfunctory prod on the back, then turns and goes. Albert lies on his back, staring up at the ceiling. A scarecrow stands in a field of root vegetables with its arms outstretched. Albert walks across the field to the scarecrow and pulls the hat and the pillowcase off its head. Tish is revealed beneath them. His face emotionless, Tish falls forwards and Albert catches him in his arms and pushes him back upright, an anguished expression on his face. He looks into his friend's eyes and hugs him tight, his face filled with emotion. Black and white footage of police holding back crowds on a street. More officers stand by Black Mariah's. In the crowd, a couple of men check their watches. In a prison, a female warder leads Albert and Georgie onto a landing and down to the condemned cell. The cell door is opened, then in slow motion, Albert steps inside, holding the strap. The condemned stands, knocking her chair over in the process. Albert steps up to the blonde woman, who's about 30, and stares at her. He turns her around and fastens her hands behind her back with the strap. She turns back round and he leads her into the death cell. Albert comes to a halt on the gallows by the noose and stops the woman in front of it. He stares into her eyes and takes the hood from the breast pocket of his jacket. As he does so, she smiles warmly at him. Albert frowns and puts the hood over her head, followed by the noose. He and Georgie, who's fastened the woman's ankles, step back off the trap doors and Albert pulls the lever. Outside, the crowd turns angry. Some people hold up a poster saying, "Ruth Ellis, children, orphans, have mercy, spare her." The crowd yell angrily as the prison gates are opened by police for a car to leave. Mounted police and more officers on foot try to drive the crowd back, and several men are arrested. As the car leaves the prison, people bang on the doors and windows. Some spit at it, and someone throws an egg which dribbles down the glass. Albert sits in the back of the car, eyes fixed forward. Eventually, he turns to look at the angry mob outside.
Find another line of policemen. A car is emerging. It's passenger. It's Mr. Pierpoint. It's Albert Pierpoint, who is now the target of the crowd's fury.
Tears streaming down her face, Annie turns the radio off. Later, Annie and a subdued Albert have dinner together. Albert sips a glass of beer and places it carefully down on the dinner table beside him.
I notice they not paid you for that job in July. Strange ways, job. I think it must have been another of them reprieves.
He nods.
It's not right, Albert.
She shakes her head.
I don't think you should put up with it anymore. I think you should write to them.
He looks up quizzically at her.
Write to the man? What would I say?
Oh, I don't know, but I know they're exploiting your goodwill. After all the years of loyal service you've given them. If I were you, I'd have a good mind to
what, Anne?
Well, I don't know, but tell them you're considering taking your name off the list. In protest, you know.
Albert stares thoughtfully at his wife.
Yes. Ah, yes, it's been bothering me. I have to make myself available on the day, don't I? For all they know, I might have to get extra staff in to cover. They don't know otherwise, do they? Oh.
That's up to you, of course, but I don't think anyone would blame you. I certainly wouldn't.
No. I shall put up with it, and you're right. It's a matter of principle, it's a point of principle. I should write a letter tonight.
Deep in thought, he returns to his meal, but being preoccupied never gets as far as eating it. He looks across the table at Annie, who gets up and walks over to him. She puts her arms around him and hugs him. Albert holds onto her arm, still deep in thought.
Oh,
Annie smiles warmly at him and squeezes his hand, then goes. Still looking deeply pensive, Albert returns his attention to his meal. He loads his fork with food and it hovers midway between plate and mouth. Albert looks up with a deeply furrowed brow and stares into the distance. Later that evening, he types a letter, extracts of which we see as it's typed. This kind of meanness. I have made up my mind to resign. Letter of resignation. Executioners forthwith. I request the removal of my name from the list of executioners forthwith. At the end of the letter, he signs in ink. Yours faithfully, Albert Pierpoint. Caption. Between 1933 and 1955, Albert Pierpoint hangs 608 people. The fruit of my experience has this bitter aftertaste. Capital punishment, in my view, achieved nothing except revenge. Albert Pierpoint, 1974.